Hello, this is Mark Iverson, the historian and host behind the American History Unabridged podcast. I find all history intriguing, but what I find of particular interest are those narratives that challenge the status quo of American history. What we're taught in school, memory, really, those things that we want to be true, but aren't necessarily. And though some of it is true, there are narratives in America and of our past that have to do with minority communities that have experienced a different America, and those that discriminated against those communities. We don't want to believe the narratives that say our country wasn't always exceptional, and in fact, it was quite unexceptional at times. But this is the history we're going to focus on this podcast. Straight out of Boise, Idaho, this is the American History Unabridged podcast. Thanks for listening. Thank you to the Trendy Dads out of San Francisco, California, for that wonderful cover of the B-52's Private Idaho. Before we get started tonight, I'd like to thank our sponsors, Funky Soul Coffee. That's soul with an S-O-L. It's the brainchild of Michelle Russell and Gavin Butler. These two had a dream, and that was to turn a 1976 Airstream camper into a coffee shop, a 70s-themed coffee shop. And they've succeeded. Michelle Russell has years and years of experience in the coffee industry, and she's come up with some truly delicious 70s-themed concoctions. I've had the privilege of tasting a few of them. But, you know, they create coffee for dreamers, and they create delicious coffee for dreamers. So they just open for business. You can book them for private events and see them at events throughout the Boise Valley. You can reach them at 208-447-9044. You can email them at hello@funkysoul.com. And you can find them on Instagram or at www.funkysoulcoffee.com. Give them a try. On this episode of the American History Unabridged podcast, we're going to be discussing Idaho's anti-gay initiative, as the opponents of this initiative called it. It's technically called Initiative 1, Proposition 1. More popularly known throughout Idaho, it was called by citizens Prop 1. But basically, this was the Idaho Citizens Alliance proposition that gays and lesbians in the workplace, in the public sphere like schools and libraries, should not have special rights, as they put it. The other side would say, well, no, we are discriminated against as a minority, so we do need civil rights and protections in place to make sure that we're not discriminated against. Well, the Idaho Citizens Alliance would say these are special rights, and since being gay is a lifestyle choice, they would say, an immoral one, they would also argue, or a deviancy, that because it's a choice, it's not like the African-American community or Latino Americans, let's say, who actually need protection from discrimination, which they do, obviously. But they're saying since it's not you're not born gay, they would argue it's a choice, then you should not have special considerations. And that would be unconstitutional for you to receive such protections because that would make you have special rights that other non-minorities can't claim. And so the other side would say, well, no, this is who we are, and we are discriminated against, and that we are, and, you know, science does back this up, we are gay naturally. We're born gay. We don't decide to find who we find attractive, and we are a minority community, and therefore we do need special consideration in the sense that we need discriminate against us all the time. And in fact, it does happen all the time. And so that is the crux of the argument. The Idaho Citizens Alliance was part of a larger agenda on the right, especially the conservative Christian right in places like Oregon. There was the Oregon Citizens Alliance, and they were involved in getting the Idaho Citizens Alliance to put forth this initiative one for the November ballot. But basically, there was a successful movement in Colorado as well. There was were movements in California. And the initiative in Oregon had failed because they'd used unconstitutional and discriminatory rhetoric and terms in their initiative. They said they were going to, pare it down, calm the language with Idaho's initiative, but yet still it was deemed unconstitutional for many drafts. And so this is the story of the battle between those opposed to this initiative, fighting for their rights, and those who claimed they were fighting for their rights against people that were not, in fact, discriminated against. And, I think the conduct on one side versus the other is telling, and we'll get into that. But, we'll let you decide, I guess. I know where I stand. But, so let's get into it. How did this all begin? Well, we got to go to Oregon. More specifically, we have to go back to 1980s Oregon. 1981 and 82, you had Senator Bob Packwood, and he was a moderate Republican who opposed the recriminalization of abortion. This ruffled the feathers of his conservative colleagues, and so they put forward a candidate to unseat Packwood. His name was Joe Lutz, and he was an energetic Baptist minister, and they wanted to put him up against Packwood. And so they created what they called the Oregon Citizens Alliance. A member of his campaign staff, Lon Mabon, was the chair of this group. And they did more than just want to put forward a more conservative candidate for Oregon State Senate. They also, one of their main issues was standing up, as they would say, to gay rights movements. And this was one of their, I guess, rallying cries, was fighting gay civil rights. And so that's the issue they coalesced around. LeBron and his crew, the Citizens Alliance, got started with Measure 8 in 1988. Measure 8 was a response to Governor Neil Goldschmidt's signed Executive Order 8720, which was signed into law in 1987. And it banned employment discrimination within the state executive branch on the basis of sexual orientation. And so, in 1988, a measure was put forward that basically wanted to revoke the governor's authority to ban sexual orientation discrimination with Measure 8. Measure 8 read, "Explanation: enacts new law, revokes governor's order which bans discrimination based on sexual orientation, both in executive branch employment and in carrying out executive branch duties within state government. The measure provides that no state official shall forbid taking personal action against a state employee because of the employee's sexual orientation. The measure permits state officials to forbid taking personal actions against state employees based on non-job-related factors. For the purposes of this measure, sexual orientation means heterosexuality, homosexuality, or bisexuality." And this measure was approved with a 52.75% of the vote in Oregon. But the Oregon Court of Appeals decided it was unconstitutional soon after in Merrick versus the Board of Higher Education. And the Oregon Supreme Court declined to hear the appeal, agreeing with the fact that it was unconstitutional. And so the Oregon Citizens Alliance packed up their bags, went home, licked their wounds, and decided that they had better things to do and accepted defeat graciously. Just kidding. that's bullshit. No, that's not how these things work. No, they came up with another more restrictive plan. It was Measure 9. They said they'd had so much success with Measure 8 because they got 52.75% of the vote, even though it was deemed unconstitutional. So I don't know how they thought they'd get Measure 9 through, but basically they said they wanted to amend the Constitution of Oregon, and it would require all state governments to actively discourage homosexuality from their employees, because that's going to be constitutional, or other related behaviors, quote-unquote, and to not facilitate, condone, or recognize those behaviors. And so they eventually, the Oregon Citizens Alliance, got enough signatures to qualify the measure to be put on the 1992 ballot. And so what actually showed up on the ballot read, amends constitution, government cannot facilitate, must discourage homosexuality, other behaviors. It posed a question. Shall constitution be amended to require that all governments discourage homosexuality, other listed behaviors, and not facilitate or recognize them? The summary read, it amends the Oregon Constitution. All governments in Oregon may not use their monies or properties to promote, encourage, or facilitate homosexuality, pedophilia, sadism, or masochism. All levels of government, including public education systems, must assist in setting a standard for Oregon's youth, which recognizes that these behaviors are abnormal, wrong, unnatural, and perverse, and that they are to be discouraged and avoided. State may not recognize this conduct under sexual orientation or sexual preference labels, or through quotas, minority status, affirmative action, or similar concepts. Well, if they thought Measure 8 was going to be unconstitutional, what did they think was going to happen with Measure 9? It obviously has a tad bit of discriminatory language in it, likening being gay with pedophilia, something that is not true. In fact, it's the reverse. And so what do you think happened? Well, it wasn't even needed to be, you know, deemed unconstitutional. The measure was voted down. 56.47% were opposed to the Oregon Citizens Alliance's measure, and 43.54% were for it. And so Mon Laban and Company, the OCA, moved their agenda and initiatives to the east. In Idaho, greener pastures, right? Lucky Idaho. And there was a man named Kelly Walton, and he was a previous staff member of the OCA, and he felt that he had gained campaign skills and organizational skills to head the Idaho Citizens Alliance. He said of this decision, when I moved back to Idaho in 1990, I had just experienced 4 years of political activity where I had gone to college in Oregon in the Portland area. I had become very involved in grassroots organization over there, so I developed some skills in it. And he was referring to his time with the OCA from 86 to 90. And he was a regular churchgoer. He was 36. And he claimed that he was an anti-special rights supporter, not an anti-gay hater. He says, I'm a nice guy. I don't hate anybody. I think violence against homosexuals is wrong. I'm just a normal guy who's concerned about what's coming. And what is that, Mr. Walton? Well, what he thought was there was a diabolical homosexual alliance bent on homosexualizing America. They were going to destroy churches, reduce them to rubble, that opposed the homosexual lifestyle, quote unquote, and that they would infiltrate schools and brainwash the children and basically make America gay. This was his belief. He actually would say that he loved gay people and that he just thought they were mentally ill, but no offense. But what actually he thought was in his Idaho Citizens Alliance was seen in a manual that the Idaho Statesman got a hold of. And then, you know, of course, activists, you know, the gay agenda and whatnot, activists who opposed, you know, discrimination against gays and actually thought that some civil rights needed to, you know, be enforced for the gay population of the United States. Well, they used some of the manual to call Mr. Walton and his ICA out. So Walton did say that these gay activists or pro-gay activists were promiscuous sodomite activists. And the manual further declared, so said the Statesman, that contraception was wrong. Gays should enjoy getting beat up by homophobes because they were masochists. And that homosexual males were 34 times more likely to commit mass murder and 90 times more likely to molest children. The manual claimed gays wanted the closing of all churches that opposed them, the total destruction of the family, and the conversions of young men by forced sodomy. And the time to do something about it was now. Well, then, in this case, but he said now. They had to do something to stop this gay agenda. And so it was, the Idaho Citizens Alliance stood on the Capitol steps in Idaho, in Boise, Idaho, on January 13th, 1993, and declared themselves an organization. And they used the exact same type of rhetoric that Lon Mabon and his cronies used in Oregon, special rights discourse. Stop special rights. That was the argument, and they started the Stop Special Rights Committee. And basically, it was a political action committee, and it targeted the homosexual community with their agenda, quote unquote, through a referendum process. And so Walton and friends proposed, well, Initiative 1, Proposition 1, for the 1994 ballot in November of 1994. But to do so, they needed to gain over 32,000 signatures from citizens of Idaho to get it on said ballot. And so that's what the first part of the Idaho Citizens Campaign was. On February 10th of 1993, the Idaho for Human Dignity group was set up, and it was meant to oppose any proposed public policies that would deny civil rights to persons who are lesbian, gay, or bisexual. The newly formed advocacy group chose Brian Berquist to be their chair. Brian had come from Hollywood, California back in 1987. For a job at BSU, and basically he got involved in activism right away. He put himself in the middle of the queer community in Boise and became an advocate for their rights and his rights. And so he formed a group, kind of a community around friends and allies. He saw the need to organize them with purpose, and so he created the Your Family, Friends, and Neighbors group in 1989, and was a trailblazer in gender identity and sexual orientation advocacy. And he really was a trailblazer. He was the right man for the job. Sadly, postscript, basically he would die of a heart attack in 1998, and it's a real tragedy. But back in 1993, Brian said, "The moment is here. The issue is current at both the state and national levels. We need to be educating people about the issues with real education." And so stopping the Idaho Citizens Alliance was only half the battle, he maintained. So the Human Dignity group understood that the role that they had was a larger movement of gays and lesbians in the country, and that they had to really stand up for all civil rights, all minorities in America. And they had to reach out and educate the community about human rights and tolerance. And Berquist and his staff had to start fighting for those rights right away, because on March 5th, 1993, Kelly Walton and 11 of his supporters and staff from the Idaho Citizens Alliance filed their initiative, at least the intent to get 32,061 signatures so that they could then actually have the initiative on the ballot. And so Initiative 1 had to be earned by the ICA, and they set about trying to find those signatures that they needed. And that is the start of the active campaigning, one group against the other. And so what was Idaho for Human Dignity opposed to? Well, it was this Initiative 1, or Proposition 1, that the ICA filed, at least for the right to petition for. And it basically would stop any public agency from enacting any measure that would establish homosexuality, or the homosexuality as a community, as a minority status, or granting homosexuals any protection based on such status. It also prohibited public schools from indicating to students, employees, or children that homosexuality is healthy and acceptable, and that government funds may not be used to sanction or express the approval of homosexuality. And that's basically an overview of it, but that is what you know, Idaho's LGBTQ plus community and their allies were opposed to. And I think with right. But it was a lot like Oregon's Proposition 9 or Measure 9, but it was a little toned down, basically. But still, the gist was that it was discriminatory and unconstitutional. So Brian Berquist basically said, this is nothing new, and it wasn't wanted then in Oregon, and it's not wanted now. He said, quote, this is an example of taking an ugly thing nobody wanted and painting it up so people will buy it. In opposition to this statement, Walton said, I respect the leadership from the opposition. I pledge not to slander any of those folks, and I would appreciate the favor returned. And then right after that, Walton claimed that the agenda of the homosexuals and pedophilia have been linked. It's the truth. So obviously he doesn't see calling the homosexuals as pedophiles as offensive. But that is what Brian Berquist was up against. But Walton and the ICA faced a setback right away in that Idaho's Attorney General Larry Echohawk wrote a 18-page legal opinion in which he found that the ICA's initiative was fatally flawed, in that it denied basic constitutional rights to homosexuals and it jeopardized the civil rights of all Idahoans. He would go on to say, this initiative is not merely an innocuous effort to ensure homosexuals do not receive special rights. Rather, it targets a class of citizens for denial of basic constitutional rights. This proposed initiative violates the most essential constitutional principles upon which our society is based. And it was clear that changes to the initiative would definitely have to take place were this to move forward. Walton, for his part, said that it was all liberal bias and that Echohawk was definitely biased towards the liberal side of things. Berquist responded to this comment saying, I'm sorry that Mr. Walton's views don't side with those of the courts in this country or the Constitution. I hope this gives him an opportunity to consider withdrawing the initiative. But, of course, it wouldn't. There were adaptations that had to be made. But I thought at this juncture, it would be prudent to kind of take a look at the two views of the Constitution that many legal scholars and legal historians have divided between two different understandings of the Constitution. An expert on the history and interpretation of the Constitution, Daniel Levin, wrote that in the first understanding, what might be termed the liberal theory, the Constitution is primarily a document that creates individual rights against government regulation. The liberal theory emphasizes privacy as a constitutional right, identifies government regulation of morality as governmental intrusion into citizens' lives, and that institutions of cultural transmission, such as schools and libraries, are to provide a free forum for ideas. Liberals would also urge that governmental regulation should not reflect the prejudices of the majority but tolerate minorities. Finally, liberals venerate the process of constitutional democracy, especially the courts, while viewing the legal process by which they would enforce many of the rights of minorities to be an expensive but legitimate way of asking constitutional questions. The second understanding of the Constitution is what Levin calls commutarian. And he writes, it is based on the proposition that the Constitution stands for a larger moral consensus about proper public and private behavior. And he goes on to say that for the commutarian, a constitutional polity's first priority is thus the preservation of its culture by regulating morality if necessary. Schools and libraries, as institutions of cultural transmission, are responsible for teaching clear lessons of right and wrong, while the creation of new rights for minority groups is viewed as a limitation on the community's right to make the distinction it wishes. Finally, commutarians view democracy as a means by which to assess the prevailing morals of the time. Rather than valuing the judicial process, many commutarians, perhaps blaming the courts for a number of past losses, view it with a form of legal realism, in which many decisions are reduced to the values of the judges who make them, end quote. And so if the ICA represents the commutarian view, and the Idaho for Human Dignity represents the liberal view, and you can see how opposed these two groups are to one another. You know, many people say that morality is relative. Commutarians would say that it's not relative, it is the will of the majority, and if the majority of an area sees something as moral or views homosexuality as immoral, well, then that should be the law of the land, perhaps. But, you know, in the wider range of America and interpretations of the Constitution, it has simply and definitely moved more towards the liberal theory in that, you know, individual rights are important. And you see this on the right these days, that individual rights are very important, but oftentimes that doesn't extend to LGBTQ plus rights. And it is always a moving and grating conflict, to be sure. And so in the commutarian way of thinking, you have these morality laws that are passed in the Idaho context back in 1864, right? So a bit archaic, but sodomy was deemed illegal, right? And that's included oral sex too. And so, you know, if you're getting down with the missus and, you know, you're a heterosexual person and you guys engage in either anal or oral sex, then you should be on the hook too. And in fact, by the law, you were, right? But invading the privacy of the bedroom seems a bit of an overreach, at least from my stand. But this wasn't the case in 1864. Earlier on in the, you know, in history, you had different types of interpretations of homosexuality. In fact, oftentimes, you know, two lonely mountain men, it was acceptable that, sometimes you just need to shack up with somebody. And so, oftentimes homosexuality wasn't seen as, or at least bisexuality wasn't seen as quite a sin as it was later in the 19th century, especially into the 1890s, when you really had the morality police, and the great evangelical reawakenings and the spread of different types of conservative Christian beliefs, and you get more and more moral policing. As I said previously, the Idaho Territory instituted these sodomy laws or crimes against nature laws back in 1863-64 in Lewiston, Idaho territory, and that was before the government moved down to Boise. But these laws go way back, these crimes against nature laws, all the way back to King Henry VIII in jolly old England, and they came across the pond in the 16th, way more the 17th century, and they were instituted here. But why are people so opposed to oral and anal buggery in Idaho? Well, perhaps it was because a fair amount of it was going on. I don't know. But in 1864, why the need to pass the law in the first place? But anyway, that's another topic for another day. But the important thing is that these laws were in place. Well, in King Henry VIII, jolly old England of the 16th century, he enacted what he called the Buggery Act of 1533. And it basically made all bum buggery and bestiality punishable by death. But these laws weren't originally meant to go after gay people. It was to prevent sex outside of marriage. And sex for pleasure was never a good thing. That's what sodomy laws were all about. A religious idea that if you wanted to have sex for fun, it had to be within the traditional bounds of marriage, you see. And so that was the origin of those laws, and some of them hopped the pond in the 17th and 18th centuries and applied there, but they were rarely enforced. And if they were, sometimes they were engaged in cases of rape and molestation. You know, if it was if it was basically a forced situation, then they could be enforced and were. But many times, if it was consensual, it wasn't an issue, although sometimes it was. But the prosecution for these crimes between consenting adults wasn't as, it didn't happen as much as we think. But as religious conservatism began to grow in the 1890s and 1900s, you start to see more of these prosecutions, whereas sodomy becomes a serious crime. And in the Idaho context, this remained true. And so you get a man in the early 20th century, his name is Charles Altwater, and he was arrested for a sodomy crime in Shoshone County in 1915. But he argued he'd only engaged in oral sex, and that wasn't specifically defined in an Idaho code, but it was included under the definition of sodomy. And so he went to jail, and he was the first really to challenge this law in the state. And so the state Supreme Court rejected his argument unanimously, and they called it one of the most heinous and unspeakable forms of crime. Today we call it a blowjob, but back then it was reprehensible. They continued, the Supreme Court, saying, "We feel disposed to follow the more modern decisions, which we think are better reasoned in keeping with progress of civilization." So, you know, by our way of thinking sometimes, these days, modern is very different from what they thought back then. Back then they thought restricting oral sex was, you know, modern. And so that was their take on it. And so after the Altwater decision, you start to see more prosecutions and convictions for sodomy laws. And some of these guys, most of these guys, end up in the Idaho State Pen here in Boise, Idaho, the old Idaho State Pen now. Great site. Do give it a visit, and you'll learn about some of these guys if you wish. But this was the collective mentality in very conservative 1950s McCarthyism America, right? Cold War panic. We got to circle the wagons and say this is what's moral. You know, they even likened homosexuals to communists. There was a predilection of homosexuals towards communism, they said. And scientifically, of course, this is true. But basically, in Idaho, you had the same mentality going on, the same atmosphere where sodomy was seen as immoral, and thus the policing of a person's private life and their bedroom became more acceptable in the name of freedom. But, you had the Boys of Boise scandal in Idaho in the 50s, and basically some men that were having consensual sex together down by the river were convicted alongside some pedophiles who were sexually assaulting teenagers. The pedophile crimes were what was needed in the minds of some of these fundamentalists that went after gay men to go and start this witch hunt against consensual sex between adult men. And so this was a scandal nationally, a huge thing, and it was really set against Wisconsin Senator Joseph McCarthy's witch hunts. That was the purges, and the demands of McCarthy and his cronies to go after gay men that were working in the government, and this, of course, spilt over in the private sector. And this was called the Lavender Scare, which was a subpart of the Red Scare, McCarthy is now seen as a giant ass, a pimple on the butt of American history, basically. But, some of these guys were in Idaho and the Pacific Northwest were loyal to McCarthy and his way of thinking. And so, these prosecutions were unfair, and men went to jail for substantial periods of time for the Boys of Boise scandal. And I think it's a dark spot on the state's history as well as America's. But of course, McCarthy went after other people too, accused communists or people who even went to a meeting, in Hollywood especially. They were witch hunts. So it wasn't just gay men and women who were attacked by McCarthy, But basically, there was a bright spot in the future. In 1955, the American Law Institute decided to decriminalize consensual anal sex between adults. And they were trying to standardize criminal law across the country, and they called this the Model Penal Code Project. And it was aimed to take a patchwork of different laws from state to state and make them federal, streamline them across the nation. And so this Model Penal Code in the nation became hot stuff in the 70s. And so Idaho jumped readily on. You know, they're like, oh, yes, that streamlining of a patchwork of laws is really a great idea. But then they found out that they had actually repealed these morality laws, too. And, you know, in Idaho, pressure from religious groups led to the legislators being like, oh, wait, we didn't mean that. And then they reinstituted these morality laws, including ye old butt buggery. And anyway, other states started to work at decriminalizing these types of laws, and Idaho didn't. They ultimately kind of jumped right back on the bandwagon of sexual repression. But in 1986, the United States Supreme Court decided in Bowers versus Hardwick, which was a case out of Georgia, they decided in a 5-4 decision that gay people had no protection or constitutional right to engage in sodomy. They reasoned that it was because they didn't want to get into a judge-made law, basically, by one judge that was not specifically in the Constitution, these protections. And so it took 20 more years or more before such a case would come up again to challenge that decision. And it was out of Texas when two men had been charged for having consensual sex, sodomy, under Texas law. Suzanne Goldberg, a lawyer out of Texas who usually worked on cases of discrimination against LGBTQ plus folks, said of the decision and the court trial that she would be involved in, this was one of the important cases of our lifetime to challenge the state's power to criminalize the lives of lesbians and gay men. And so when asked if she would be willing to help, she said, of course. And so getting back to Idaho, the atmosphere in 1993-1994, Boise in Idaho, was basically about activism. It was like, let's stand up for our civil rights, because after 1986, with the Bowers decision saying gay men weren't constitutionally protected to have sex with other men, well, basically it's like, no, wait, I'm done with this. No, you can't come into my business and say what I can't do consensually in my own house, my own home, my own world. And so guess what? We're going to come out of the closet. Many of us did. We're going to stand up for ourselves. We're going to have pride in what we do. And then you get the pride parades come out of this atmosphere. And in 1994, this is where Initiative One is opposed. It wasn't until 2003 with Lawrence versus Texas, where the Supreme Court voted in a 6-3 decision that Bowers versus Hardwick in 1986 had been in error. Justice Anthony Kennedy would basically say that the court had no right to ban sex between consenting adults, sodomy included. And he basically said their penalties and purposes have more far-reaching consequences touching upon the most private human conduct, sexual behavior, and in the most private of places, the home. And so, yes, you have a right to do that kind of stuff, whatever your stuff is, in your own home. And that was that for Kennedy. On the side of the dissenters, Justice Antonin Scalia, more of a commutarian viewpoint on this, said, it is clear from this that the court has taken sides in the culture war, and in particular in the battle of the culture war that concerns whether there should be any moral opprobrium attached to homosexual content. But of course, I'd like to point out that to Antonin Scalia that basically in doing the latter in 1986 by saying there's no constitutional right to, you know, engage in sodomy and, you know, sex between two men in a consenting nature, he's saying that, you know, he is basically taking a side in the culture war in that decision, too. You're saying that gay men don't have a right to have sex together, and that is therefore making a decision in larger moral or versus immoral debates in America. And so in 2022, long ago, ancient history, right? No, not really. But in 2022, Idaho repealed its sodomy law. That was March of 2022. And basically, sodomy is now a crime, as it should be in these cases. Force, right? If it's committed by force, also called rape, well, that is a crime. When it is somebody who is underage of consent, that is a crime. Incapacitation. Sodomy is considered a crime if it is committed when someone or with someone who is incapacitated or who cannot consent. That's also rape. Well, we like to doll things up in legal mumbo jumbo, but yes, nobody was ever arguing that. But consent is key, of course, in all sexual relationships. And so this finally makes some sense. But, you know, there are other places in America where sodomy is still illegal. And take a guess. It ain't Massachusetts. Yeah, well, shit. It actually is illegal in Massachusetts. Let's see, where else is it? We got America's penis, Florida. That's definitely not a surprise to most people, I'm sure. Then we got Georgia. We got Kansas, the Plains. We got a coal mining country in Kentucky, Louisiana, Massachusetts. We got Michigan. We got M-I-S-S-I-S-S-I-P-P-I, Mississippi, North Carolina, Oklahoma, South Carolina, and Texas. But basically, yeah, these are the states, including Massachusetts, where sodomy is still illegal. And it might not be a surprise for some of those states, but Massachusetts, yeah, that was a surprise to me. Because, you know, I generalize things too, like anybody else. But this was as of July 21st, 2023, when I read this article, or at least when this article in the New Yorker was published. So for that wonderful information that I use in that history of sodomy laws, I would like to thank this great article, Idaho Sodomy Suit Revives Specters of the Law's Dark History, by Boise State Public Radio's James Dawson. Anyway, it was a great overview of the law. And so all the way back in our time machine to 1993-94, Idaho, you very much could technically get in trouble for consensual sodomy. But technically, this was also supposed to apply to women and men. And it was also one of those laws, basically, that in a case of rape or the molestation of a child, of course, one would be prosecuted for sodomy. And nobody's arguing or ever argued that it shouldn't be. But this is a matter of consent. So if a man and a woman consensually engage in sodomy, all right, no problem. If two men engage in sodomy, I think it would be fair to say also no problem, right? Because it's consensual. That's the key. And so what you think is moral, Initiative One, folks, shouldn't matter in a constitutional democracy. But not everybody in Idaho believed in such an opinion, and in fact, 32,061 signatures were acquired by the Idaho Citizens Alliance and Kelly Walton and company. And so, you know, as the Yes to Initiative One folks started to get the idea that this was going to actually be on the ballot, there were constitutional reviews to make sure that it could be on the ballot, that basically the Yes to Initiative One folks became more brazen, and your most vocal and bigoted people on that side of the aisle started to show their true colors. On June 1st, 1994, 1,167 people attended the 5th annual Lesbian, Gay, and Bisexual Freedom Day. We call this Pride nowadays. But about 40 protesters showed up yelling openly hateful things and displaying openly hateful signs that said, one sign, I have pictures, of course, look to my Instagram page, Ida History Instagram page. But one of the signs said, the only good queer is a dead queer. Some of the other signs, they hanged an epitaph of Ellen, you know. Let's see, what else did we have? We had, on some of those signs, you had comparisons between, look what Hitler did with the Jews. We could do that with the queers, you know, and I have pictures as proof. If you want to see them, I'll send them to you. And in the face of this kind of hate, and, there are more things that I didn't say include, Brian Berquist and his Idaho for Human Dignity group blew kisses, you know? And they didn't let that shade and hate basically spill over them. They stood up to it with kindness and celebrating who they were and are. And so, I don't know. I can't say for sure that there haven't been in Boise and Idaho's history LGBTQ plus person that hasn't had a sign that said, kill all heterosexual people, but I'm pretty sure they haven't. Maybe they've had an ill-intended sign. I don't know. But, maybe they should start doing that. I don't know. Maybe even it out. I don't know. Probably not. Highway. Always go to the high ground, in activism. One thing had become clear from 1993 to 1994, and that was when you have hateful words, rhetoric, and political agendas, you get more physical violence towards the group you are scapegoating or, identifying as other. And so the Ada County Human Rights Task Force reported on June 4th, 1994, that there had been a rise of 67% in hate crimes against gay people in the year prior. So Proposition 1, with that battle, the Human Rights Task Force started the Idaho is Too Great for Hate campaign. The No on One coalition was started out of the Idaho for Human Dignity Project or group. They started the No on Coalition One group to now oppose not the petition, but the actual initiative now on the ballot for November. And back to the ICA's manual, the Idaho Citizens Alliance manual that also applied in Oregon and Washington. They had the same manual, basically. But it read, the ICA is fashioned after a military model because we are at war with the forces of evil in our culture, quoted said manual. Some people said that was damn near Hitler-esque, that they were trying to scapegoat or label one group as evil and saying that they scapegoat them for a breakdown in culture and that this would allow for more violence to be conducted because, when people think another group's evil, then they think that violence is justified against that group. And that's why you saw such a rise in hate crimes over 1993 to 94. And it ain't no coinky dink because that sort of language otherizes. So while it's not on level with, of course, what Hitler did to the Jewish people, the gypsy people, the homosexual community of Europe and on, it definitely starts in the same ballpark, right? It starts in the same place because you are otherizing and making the other side seem derogatory or less than or vile. And that's how this type of violence starts. And so that's what Initiative One and the ICA were doing. And so across Idaho, you had various groups basically stand up to this. You had the evangelical community that was for Initiative One, but then you had the Episcopalian Church, you had the Catholic Church, and various other groups that were opposed to it because it added needless discrimination against a minority group. They recognize the minority status of gay and lesbian people and bisexual people in Idaho and everywhere. And so, it wasn't all the religious community on the pro-initiative side. It was definitely conservative evangelicals the most on the right that were opposed or that were for Initiative One. You also had business districts. You had, chambers of commerce. You had business groups throughout Idaho saying this is no good for our tourism. Look at Colorado passed such a law back there in 92, and everybody started skiing in Sun Valley, right? They're leaving the slopes of Colorado, and they're moving over to Idaho. So their ignorance over there in Colorado was good for us. And now we're going to do the same thing, and people are going to want to come to this state to ski and to enjoy the mountains and provide for tourism. You know, that's our bread and butter, baby. We got to have tourism, right? It can't all be potatoes. Out of more than 110 legislators, only 9 thought agreed with the initiative. A lot of them, they weren't like, okay, I'm pro-gay all the way. They're basically like, this is pointless. This is just, it's going to be challenged constitutionally. Like a lot of the laws that come out of Idaho are. You know, it's like, oh, we're gonna put these out there because we think that's the right thing to do. And then they're challenged constitutionally because they're stupid. It's like they're done with somebody who doesn't know what the hell they're talking about. You know, that's going on with this one. People are like, what? Why? It's a pointless thing because, the LGBTQ plus community in Idaho didn't have special protections. And, there were laws against sodomy. Like, this was an unnecessary initiative, and they didn't want to support it. And so it wasn't for like, oh, yeah, I believe in human rights and civil rights for gay people. No, it wasn't that. But they just thought it was ridiculous and pointless, and it would be an expenditure we didn't need to create. And so that's another side of it. And some people were fervently for it, that definitely supported it, and you would see that in the final outcome that a large quantity of people did. I mean, it came down to 3,000 votes and a little more than that. That's it. Throughout the fall, the No on One coalition called registered voters, thousands of them, to determine their feelings about Initiative One, Prop One, and 59% were undecided. And due to such information, both sides brought in speakers to kind of educate the crowd, if you will, I say with the quotations. But funny enough, a former ghostwriter for Reverend Conservative Jerry Falwell came in, and he was an advocate for human rights for gay people, and his name was Mel White, and he campaigned vociferously against Proposition 1. And the initiative people, they brought in a man named Paul Cameron, and he had been accused of non-scientific research, and he had been ousted from several professional associations, including the American Psychological Association. So says Daniel Levin in his chapter in Anti-Gay Rights, the book. And, Cameron also made controversial conclusions and statements that he said gays die younger, they suffer more disease, they ingest feces. Well, who doesn't? Okay. They molest children, and they were widely quoted. He was widely quoted by anti-gay activists throughout the entire campaign. And so, this was who they brought in. And so they brought in somebody who basically said all the same tired shit that other people that were homophobes said, which is that gay people are pedophiles. That's always been one. We need to protect the children. When statistically, heterosexual people are more likely to molest children than gay people are. That's just a phys act. It's so much of a fact that the Child Molestation Research and Prevention Institute noted that 90% of child molesters target children in their network of family and friends, and that the majority are married to women. Most child molesters, therefore, are not gay people lingering outside of schools waiting to snatch children from the playground, as much as the religious right rhetoric suggests. Moreover, according to the American Psychological Association, children are not more likely to be molested by LGBTQ parents or their LGBTQ friends or acquaintances. A man named Gregory Herrick, a professor at the University of California, Davis, who the ACLU says is one of the nation's leading researchers on prejudice against sexual minorities, basically found no evidence that gay men molest children at higher rates than heterosexual men. A anti-gay activist like to make the claim where they allege that all men who molest children should be seen as homosexuals. Nicholas Groth, a pioneer in the field of sexual abuse of children, shows that this is not the case. He found that there are basically two types of child molesters, fixated and regressive. A fixated child molester, this is the stereotypical pedophile, he can't be considered a homosexual or a heterosexual. And as Groth writes, he often finds adults of either sex repulsive, and he molests children of both sexes. Now, the other type, a regressive child molester, they are generally attracted to other adults, but may, quote unquote, regress to focus on children when confronted with stressful situations. So Groth found, and Herrick also found, that the majority of regressed offenders were heterosexual adults and in heterosexual relationships. And so, you know, that whole idea that gay people molest people is ridiculous. Numerically speaking, heterosexuals make up the majority of the United States, so there's not going to be a higher propensity of gay people or LGBTQ plus people to molest children. Into October, shit got a little bit negatory for the Initiative One people in the sense that in Colorado, on October 11th, 1994, Colorado's anti-gay voter initiative was declared unconstitutional by the Supreme Court, the state Supreme Court, that October. And ACLU attorneys suggested that in Idaho, and they publicly suggested this, Idaho's law had similar flaws. And so people were like, it's going to be a pointless exercise to vote for this thing because it's going to be overturned too. And news stories attempted to explain to the general public the difference between affirmative action laws and non-discrimination status. And so basically they're like, this is not a special treatment issue. We're just saying this is a minority you can't discriminate against. Like, you can't find out that Sally's gay and Sally, you know, works in accounting for the state and then fire Sally because she's gay. You know, that's not affirmative action. That's just saying you can't be a dick. You can't do stuff like that. That's not fair. And so as that November election day neared, you had the ICA spend $20,000 on 8 different ads on statewide television and airwaves. You also had No on One spending $200,000 for 4 ads. I wonder what eight that you got for $20,000, what those commercials look like versus $200,000 for 4. I don't know. Kelly Walton of the ICA and Dennis Mansfield of the Idaho Family Forum, another group, conservative group, debated Brian Berquist from No on One and Mary Rolfling from Idaho for Human Dignity on public television. And the week before the elections, polls showed that the ballot measure was losing by 10 to 20%. Rallies were held before to get out to vote, you know, and Levin wrote, a diverse group of religious and political leaders and private citizens spoke out against the initiative, including nationally Reverend Jesse Jackson and Coretta Scott King. They urged voters not to pass the initiatives because they were restrictive of rights of minorities. So, you know, shoot, the other side said, the initiative people side said that, you know, you can't. There's no discrimination against somebody making a choice, a lifestyle choice. Well, Coretta Scott King disagreed with that. The ICA was like, hey, what about the fact that, gays can have rights when blacks suffer real discrimination that they can't avoid because they're naturally black? And it's like, well, they're naturally gay. And that, again, comes to that one thing that the other side just won't get in their head is the natural order of things. As election day got close, ICA leaders claimed that there was fraud going on and that there was instructions to give elderly absentee voters told what to say and vote no on the ballot. And Opposition leaders disavowed this knowledge and said, no, we've not intentionally confused anyone. We think the initiative itself achieves that. Right. Nobody knew. Like, special rights versus discrimination. What? Anti-discrimination versus special rights? What? And so on election day, the Republicans basically swept the nation and Idaho. But Proposition 1 vote was very close. It took 2 days before the outcome was certain. And the initiative failed by 3,098 votes. And that is of a population of 420,000 that voted in Idaho. 11,700 chose not to vote at all on Proposition 1 that did fill out the ballot. And Kelly Walton said, we won the war last night, but we lost the skirmish. And then he vowed to do it again, and he failed. In 96, people were like, fuck off. We don't want to deal with this. We're good as it is. And here's the point where I say my piece. And my piece is basically, you know, history is supposed to be as non-biased as possible. But there are certain subjects where I think it's okay to show your bias. And when it comes to explicit discrimination and bigotry and homophobia and advocating for violence and scapegoating innocent minorities, that's where I'm going to show my bias. And I think history can be activism in the sense that when you tell the truth about the ignorance of one side, which is the initiative one people, as opposed to the clean campaign run by the No on One coalition and the Idaho for Human Dignity group, they didn't say anything. They didn't have any signs that said kill all queers or liken what Hitler did to the Jews is something they should do to homosexuals. There was nothing done on the No on One coalition like that. And all they were trying to say is, hey, just don't discriminate against us. In fact, we are a minority because we were born this way. And science proves that shit. Chromosomes, baby. I intentionally went and found the most boring presentations I could find from professors at Stanford, Ivy League colleges, you know, you name it, the best colleges, to explain the body, our biology, and being gay or trans. And there are chromosome differences. We are awash in hormones when we are a baby in our head. And we have estrogen and testosterone just all around our brains and our bodies. And so some of us come out with a little bit more estrogen versus a little bit less testosterone. If we're let's say, an effeminate gay man, right? That's a natural thing, right? Or maybe there's a woman that has a more quote-unquote masculine characteristics. Well, we define what those are, and also, yes, perhaps she has more testosterone that she was awash in versus estrogen. Who knows? But what I'm saying is it's scientific. And so those who don't want to accept that can take a hike. And even if you don't agree with, Kelly Walton would say, the homosexual agenda, well, you don't get to choose that, right? We're going to the liberal side of viewing the Constitution these days, right? You don't get to define morality in a representative democracy, right? Or if you're one of those people that say, well, no, it's a constitutional republic. Well, you don't get to do that in that either, okay? Whatever. So you leave us alone, and we'll leave you alone. A gay person not being discriminated against at work or fired because they're gay isn't going to hurt you. You can still work there as a straight Christian fundamentalist, right? As long as you don't hate on other people, right? So basically, just live and let live, man, all right? You don't have gay people telling you you can't think that they are wrong. They're saying that that's ridiculous and that they're going to be proud of who they are, but you can think whatever dipshittery you want to think, right? It's your right to be that way as long as you don't hate on other people, right? And that goes in libraries, in the public sphere, at colleges, right? You got to tolerate people even if you don't agree with them. As gay people and LGBTQ plus people have to deal with your ass, well, so you have to deal with them, right? And so Don't go to a pride festival. Don't go to a pride festival. Just don't go. Shut up. Don't go. And if you want to go, go be happy. Go be jovial. Go be positive and support a minority that are just fine how they are. Okay? And so that's my two cents. I hope we're done with these initiatives and these propositions, but something tells me we're not. But, you know, that's my bias. You know, sometimes you don't have bias history, but sometimes it's needed because the other side is so wrong and ignorant that it's laughable. The only reason you're making these statements that gay people, you know, are trying to seek special rights is because you have a particular view derived from religion, from your interpretation of religion, right? And so the Bible or the Quran or whatever, but you are interpreting it one way that you think should apply to all. Well, gay people, LGBTQ plus folks these days aren't trying to do that to you. They're just trying to say that this is our world too, and we have a right to live in it and be proud of who we are. And so that's that. And that's my podcast. You know what? I'm sure I'm going to piss some people off, but I don't care. They're the right people to piss off if that's the problem. I know what side of the history I'm going to stand on. It's always for more equity, more kindness, more representation for those who haven't been represented equally in the past, and less discrimination. And so, God bless and good night. Tune in next week, and thanks for listening. Don't you wrong, I'm in Idaho. Don't you wrong, driving out.